Hey everyone, thank you for tuning in to the SFLC podcast. We'd like to thank our sponsors, Dependable Solutions, innovating the future of your small to medium-sized business since 2012. Learn how you can save 40 to 60% on your overall credit card processing bill by going to dependable-solutions.net. Again, that's dependable-solutions.net. Also, teststrips.com. That's teststrips with a Z.com. Managing diabetes is your business. Making it affordable is theirs. Sell your extra unused diabetes supplies for up to $50 per box and support a worthy cause. Rated a Better Business Bureau accredited A+ rating for over 5 years. Partnered with 98.5 The Sports Hub and affiliated with the American Diabetes Association. Make sure to check them out again. That is teststrips with a Z.com. Finally, we'd like to thank the UFC South Austin Gym, located at 9900 South Interstate 35 in Austin, Texas. Learn how you can get 3 free classes when you sign up and mention the SFLC podcast. Be sure to call them at 512-292-1900.
SFLC podcast.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the SFLC podcast. We had a little bit of a break there for you. I mean, you know, we all know what happens when you don't have any MMA or you only have, like, you know, certain MMA events. We didn't have UFC, didn't have Bellator, but there was plenty to go around, but we took a little bit of a break. We are back now, and of course, we have another friend of the show joining us, talking, well, probably one of the first few that was ever talking MMA, but he has a lot going on with him right now. Welcome back to the show, Dwayne Finley. Dwayne, how we doing, my man?
I think that's the best segue ever when you talk about a break, because I'm coming off a nice long one. So, I think breaks are good, brother. I mean, I know in this MMA grind that, you know, you're in, and I've been kind of out of for a second, you know, it's real easy to get caught up in how hectic that schedule gets, but you gotta take a little time for yourself, brother. It's important, but I'm well.
You know, and it was funny on your Facebook, you were even talking about how those breaks are important and how being able to, you know, kind of step aside for a minute just to focus, even if it's for a few days, is important. And, you know, for a little bit, I'm sitting here like, man, I didn't do a show last week and kind of felt bad. But then, you know, I read that. I'm like, you know what? I feel like I would have been spinning mud if I was trying to do a show just in spite of doing a show.
Absolutely, and I'm really glad you phrased it that way. You know, I've always respected your outlook, and what I put there on that Facebook post about not reading your gauges, man, like, that's the lesson learned. If I take anything from, you know, this sabbatical I've taken for the last year, it's that, as I really failed to read those gauges. You know, I mean, if you look at the trajectory, I mean, I started in 2008 with BJPenn.com, back when BJ was a big part of it, and run by his brother JD, and then so you go from 2008 to 18 to Flow Combat, and then everything that happened there, you know, it's a decade of just running, and I just didn't really just ever check the gauges. So I always got in my head, I'm like, if I get to this next point, if I get past this next event, if I get past this next story, then I'll be okay. And then, well, eventually, what's going to stop that? You know, what's going to, the car's going to break down, the driver breaks down, or weather calls the race, you know, it's like, it's one or the other. So, you know, I came through a rough path where it's kind of all three converged, and, you know, in this year off, I'm getting back to it now, and I've lingered in, like I said, that post, I've lingered in mediocrity, and there's no offense to anybody, that, you know, or anything, but I've just kind of, you know, I kind of stayed in that comfortable position of neutral for a long time, and that's why I'm uncomfortable.
You know, and that brings up a really good point that I wanted to ask you for a while was, did you ever feel like if you kept going without taking that break that you and I have talked about in the past, that you might run into disliking the sport or kind of feeling like the sport was to blame for, you know, things that happened outside of it? Does that make sense?
Oh, it absolutely does. And it's absolutely true. That is a big part of it. You know, my whole thing since I started, I kind of made my niche with working with fighters. So the fighters is what I've always, you know, loved about this thing. You know, their stories, getting their information and their struggles and their triumphs to people to understand and read and acknowledge. And that's been I've been that conduit. But at the same time, absolutely, you grow to look at that thing that keeps you away from your family. You grow to look at that thing that's wearing you down, that thing that's always there. And at Flow Combat, I mean, you know, that there was no joke. Is, you know, you kind of danced around it a little bit in your intro, but your regional MMA, it's very important. Don't get me wrong. Regional MMA is very important. All these future superstars come from somewhere. But damn, man, is it difficult sometimes to dig in and find the good stuff. And at Flow Combat, we had a whole, a whole cart of just tough, ugly shows at times. There were some great ones, absolutely, and worked with some great young fighters on the come up. But at the same time, man, there was a lot of filler in there. So, you know, to go to work in that every weekend, and you know, and Hunter and I, it just as a two man, you know, it really burnt me out. And because at the same time, when you're doing that, you're kind of eager looking for those, you know, those Max Holloway stories, those Aljamain, you know, Sterling, the Ag, when it's the things you want to tell, that you're like, man, if I can't survive this Michigan show, I don't know what's going to happen, you know? So, there was absolutely starting to be a resentment that growed. And then the business of it all, I mean, if you look at the 2000, at the beginning of 2018, things really took a shift hard on the writing side of this business. You know, you saw big entities like Bleacher Report, Clean House, MMA Junkie had some turnover fighting. You know, obviously ESPN's made a big, acquisition with a lot of talent coming over. And it's just, you know, what the landscape of what once was isn't there anymore. So, you know, it was all that kind of a change of the guard. And it was a perfect time, really, to kind of step out and assess some things. And if we had this conversation 2 weeks ago, I would have told you flat out, I'm not returning to MMA. Some things have been happening in the last 2 weeks. And yeah, I mean, I can't quite talk about it just yet, but I think I'll be coming back around.
And a couple of things to say off of that. First and foremost, I'll tell you this the same way that I've told Lou Giordano this several times. I'm like, yeah, you can sit here and tell me that you're done and you want to be done with MMA. Look, you're not done with MMA. I've read this. I know how you are. You're going to continue coming back to MMA in some light. So that was my first message to you, Dwayne. Because again, I was talking with... I was talking with Lou Giordano, and you know, we're talking about the crazy stuff that was going on. I mean, a little side note, I don't know if you watched Ariel Helwani's show over the past couple of weeks, where he had George Lockhart and he had Mike Dolce come on, and they kind of traded jabs at each other, right? I think George Lockhart wanted to challenge Mike Dolce to a fight, you know, and that George Lockhart was doing his other side company. And then Mike Dolce came in and he gave his 2 cents, you know, but around that I was talking with Lou Giordano and Lou was like, you know, I'm shocked that none of them are actually talking about what's actually happening with fighters, why the fighters are missing weight, what the answers are, how we can do this. And, you know, it was funny. Lou was like, I keep seeing it. And I told myself I'm only going to work with a few more fighters. And then once those fighters are done, I'm done. But then I could tell that he wasn't done. And it's kind of similar with you, Dwayne. Like, we know, and you've shown him on Facebook, you know, when you end up having your son get messages from fighters, those are little things that are pulling you back. I can see this.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, what's important to me is the relationship. It's always been, and I think that's why it's always been kind of a weird stance to live in. I'm not a journalist, man. I'm a storyteller. Like, I don't know, you know, crap about, you know, anything like that. There's no objectivity here. You know, my job is to tell stories. It's always been that way. And I don't know what's going on with Helwani. I wish the kid the best, but I'm sure he's tearing it up over ESPN. The antagonistic stuff doesn't surprise me a bit. I mean, you kind of do what you do. You know, you got to get people to watch. And both guys, Lamas and Domir, are good to me, but they also got a brand to push. So, you know, things happen. But and they both got Johnny Hendricks history, so... You know how that goes, you know, that's the thing, is that this business, this sport is very much ingrained in the fabric of my life, and And yes, I mean the you can't go and spend 6 weeks in Albuquerque telling a Carlos Condit story and not come out of it and have some kind of relationship with the person you covered. I mean, it's impossible. And Lois is still one of my super close friends, you know. And I have that kind of rapport with I think everybody I've ever worked with. So I think that I don't have any really bad stories that way. So I think that was the thing, though. It was the storytelling aspect of it, and you know, kind of what we're leading into with what I got going on now. It was kind of doubling down on that, the fact that storytelling was what's important.
And you had a perfect segue there. You were talking about segues earlier. I was just about to say, and in the midst of all of these storytellings, of all of these fighters, and all of these interactions that you've had, and again, I alluded to them on the ones that you mentioned about how your son will get birthday messages from just like these people that I probably couldn't even get two words with right now, but still fun nonetheless. And you have a show coming up that you talked about the last time you were on, and you were getting super excited for all that. And now we're super close to the actual date, right? We're almost right there.
Yeah, we're a week away.
You're a week away from showtime. I mean, this is and like you said, this is you talking about your life and all of these stories that you tell so well. Now you're putting it, you know, on the stage. How we doing? Are we're doing good?
Yeah. Yeah, I gotta say, can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir. We can hear you perfect.
Oh, excellent. So, where this like concept came from is I spent so much time, you know, telling these MMA stories and whatnot that, my mentor, Thomas Gervasi, you know, great combat sports writer, one of the best to ever do it, he always kind of kept me focused, like, hey, you know, you need to, he's like, your story's important as well. And I looked at this thing when I was off on sabbatical, and I was like, man, this journey's been crazy, but it hasn't just been all MMA related. MMA's been a big part of the background, but it's just kind of a background of a bigger story. So I said about, you know, after my last book, In the Cool Distance, came out and was really well received, it did well, and, you know, I have a few more books to fulfill on that deal. And, you know, I just said, man, I don't really want to know, I don't really feel like I have the MMA cup's kind of empty right now. I haven't really filled it, but I have a whole bunch of other life stories that are anecdotal or, you know, a bit more serious. And that's why I think a lot of people who kind of jumping into the show and excited about it, you know, I don't know if I've explained it super well. I mean, yeah, some stuff is going to be funny and some stuff's going to be endearing, you know. It's a live, I'm a charismatic guy, but it's also going to be, I'm not pulling punches. I'm going to talk about some of the darker parts of what happened in this sabbatical, why I stepped away, what was going on in my life at the time, what I had through, but all in a way, Ryan, that connects, all in a way that people can learn from, all in a way that's a way that just saying, hey, look, this thing is a celebration of life. That's the thing that I have really grown to appreciate in this year. Just that it's that, man, the stories endure, but it's the heart that you put into them that makes it. So yeah, I decided, you know, I had this material, I had all this stuff, and I just couldn't, man, I could not pull the trigger on opening a keyboard. I have not opened up a computer and almost a year and a half now to write. I haven't touched anything, and that's been so distant and foreign to me. I remember that's why I basically supposed to get back into the, I would not do, been offered 1,000 jobs in MMA. In the meantime, and from little to big, and I kind of said no to everything. And it's been really flaky. You know, and people come with the best of intentions, and, you know, getting good money gigs in this sport are hard, but I kind of flaked on everything. But I just wasn't ready to do it. So I got to talking with my wife, and I said, you know, I got all this stuff I need to say. I'm ready to do it, but I don't know how to form it. And then I got thinking, I'm like, you know, a stand-up comedian, how they form their sets, you know, they'll go to open mics, they'll work out these little, you know, 7-minute, 10-minute sets, work their jokes out that way. Well, what if I can put the stories out that way? Instead of having to sit and write 60 stories that I don't know if half are going to hit the mark, why don't I go in front of a live audience, tell those stories almost verbatim how I would write them, because I write very much like I speak, and if they connect, I know. And if they don't, I can just scrap them right there. So my goal is, once I do this you know, six city situation, then I'll have, let's see, that's 12 shows. I'll have enough stuff. You know, I have 40 stories. That sounds like two books to me. You know what I mean? So I think it all works. Plus, it gives me that therapy, you know, that catharsis of saying how I feel and saying some things that I have, you know, breathed life into in a year and a half, you know, about it. And that's why I also mentioned on social media, you know, I'm so grateful people respect my privacy and things like that. Because, as you know from doing what you do, a lot of people will follow us over to, like, Facebook and Twitter. And, you know, they read your stuff, they follow your stuff, they also feel that they know you. And I think that's a big part of it. I think, you know, and I have a lot of people that kind of follow me and follow my life. So, yeah, everybody's been super respectful. And now we're going to give them hell, brother. It's going to be fun, man. I'm trying to kind of... But it's kind of like a rolling circuit. That's just kind of what it is. You know, I know what I have to do, but I want to make sure people are getting their money's worth. So I bring some people. I bring some friends that every town I go to that are, you know, that'll make it fun, that that'll share their talent and turn it into a interactive, you know, 3 hours of your Friday, Saturday night.
No, that sounds great. And like you said, your family has been very supportive of this throughout the entirety of this, and you've made that no secret. And it sounds like you were able to be put into the perfect kind of creative scenario, which, I mean, you and I both know, doesn't always happen that way. Sometimes you try and get that, and it's just not there. So to be able to kind of come up with a way of how to get those creative juices reflowing. And like you said, at the end of this, you could have two books out of it. I mean, that's just such a unique way of going about doing this. Normally people do books or write books and then they go and do tours, right? You're kind of doing the inverted part of that.
Yeah, because they have something to sell, right? They want to get that out. I don't. Like, I'm honestly, the way I'm getting this right is it's my way of saying thank you. You know what I mean? Like, I want to, everybody I come in contact with, yourself, anybody in this world that I have a relationship with, I've taken something from you in some way, in some form, whether it's something from a conversation, whether it's something from an interaction. I promise you, I've taken something from everybody I've interacted with and it's come and used somewhere else in a story or a sentiment or somewhere. This is my way of saying thanks, and to do it in a live way, that would be a lot of fun and be a real heartfelt experience. But I will tell you this: there was also a point here about, I don't know, about 6 months ago, where my wife, bless her heart, looked at me and was like, "Look, I know what you're doing. I know you got to get your head right. I know you need to slow things down." But she's like, "But I need the old Dwayne at some point. You know, the old Dwayne who's." You know, I'm like, oh no, old Dwayne's not good. You know, old Dwayne crashed hard. Like I ran into that wall. I didn't jump in. She's like, no, I get that. But I need that Dwayne who's unstoppable and you know, a driving force in all things. This chaotic kind of kinetic energy that just kind of always flows. And at first, I was like, man, I don't know about that. That's a lot of pressure, woman. You know, like, what are you doing putting that on me? And then it made sense to me. You know, it made sense that, you know, when I'm at my best, everything does the best. The family's always been here. You know, they're always been great support and everything. But it's time for me to get back to doing the things that make me who I am. So, you know, I put myself in a different position. You know, I went and got a hold of my agent. I had talked to her almost like 8 months. And then, you know, I called her up like, hey, I'm ready. She's like, what do you want to do? I said, I don't know. And, you know, as Nick, you know, I gave her like an outline. Woman, Autumn Allen, is a force of nature, so she starts kind of spitballing and getting this going. Next thing you know, we got this tour for him, and I'm like, she's like, that's what you wanted? I'm like, yeah, I think kind of, but yeah, great. And then, you know, now it's happening. It's almost kind of like the fight or flight thing. You know, it's back-to-back nights everywhere I go. No, it's not really following a pattern of anything. And you know, this first one's gonna be legit. We have some really old friends, some really great people are coming out. You know, to show the support. You know, the most spicy UFC history, Mr. Jim Miller's coming from New Jersey out to the Chicagoland area to come hang with old Bo and. You know, a few other guys that are gonna pop in, but that was the thing. Is originally I was like, man, you know, I really want to, you know, I should put this on there that these guys are coming. But at the same time, I really backed off that, and as you've seen in the last couple of weeks, because it's like, man, I don't want to put them out there as a selling point to say, hey, man, you got to come see these guys, blah, blah. It's just that it's part of the just part of the experience. These guys are my friends. These guys are my brothers. You know, I've shared a lot of stuff with these guys, and they've been a part of this journey. And the fact that they would come from the East Coast to come out and hang with me on a few nights that they know is super important, that really just says a lot. You know, these guys that, you know, all I ever did was put some words on paper for them, that they know what I've been through the last year. They know they've been great support to get me back on my feet. And now they get to see it, and now they're happy that I'm there. So, yeah, they'll give me some shit, but, you know what, it's gonna be a fun night. There'll be plenty of video footage to go around. You know, it'll be a good time.
Well, hopefully we'll be able to see that. Now, let me think here. Since I know you're going to be in Chicago and it's a two-night stint, I can only imagine that you'll probably be hearing something from Mr. Mike Pendleton, maybe a Mike Strauss, a lot of people who are around there. You know, I used to live around there myself also. So I'm sure you're going to get some major support. And where are those two shows in the event that you haven't sold both of them out?
Oh, no, yeah, it's Chicagoland, a little, yeah, and I've heard from both that you mentioned, both great guys, and I grew up about an hour and a half southwest. It's kind of like 40 minutes west of Joliet, however you want to say it, right down I-80. So when we decided to do the first two shows, we were like, well, then we could do an indie where I currently live now. And that would be, you know, whatever. And then I got thinking, man, you know what? Let's start at home. You know what I mean? Let's start at home. I'm from a little area that doesn't get any love, and there's this really kind of a fallen economy there. It's all, you know, farms and subsidies and stuff like that. And I was like, man, what if I could give back? If I'm going to start this, really do this from the heart, then these are the people I want to thank first. Because, you know, no matter, I've gone all over the world. I've woken up and seen sunrise and sunsets in all different parts of the globe. But the little 200-person town that I'm from, you know, that shapes me in the biggest way. It's still a big part of me. So to go back there, to find an establishment that can hold the people, the show sold out. And it sold out quick. So it paid off. And we are giving... we're donating the proceeds to a good cause. So, you know, I'm not taking any of this money. This is my way of saying thanks.
Outstanding. And then the other two cities that you're going for back-to-back shows, where are those? And where can people find tickets so that they can go and catch your show live and just kind of watch how these stories all come together?
Well, we have Kansas City and Albuquerque coming up after Illinois. So we're going to go west and we're going to come back east. Eventbrite, I would say, is the best place right now until like everything gets pulled together. They have the tickets are available online at eventbrite.com. Just enter my name, DuaneFinley, and the shows and the dates will come up, and you can just get from there. So that can be done by mobile, through laptop, whatever. That's a pretty great website, and then it tracks and the proceeds where it needs to go. The whole thing's a bit ambitious, if you will, but I'm excited. Like I said, and brother, this could fail. You know, this could fail. Like, maybe my belief in storytelling, you know, isn't as strong as what I think is out there. But man, I think people just love to hear good stories. You know, and if you look at like the way like a Christmas story or something like that that's narrated by like John Shepherd, and you think the way people just sit around listening to radio, or the way people sit in bars now and listen to stories of like old high school glory or whatnot. You know, I think, you know, I've been all around the world telling stories in different places and captivated people's attention. You know, I come from a long line of great, you know, oral storytellers, man. Like they could just, my grandfather and my father could just both captivate rooms, and I got the gift. So, I'm going to put that to the test. And, you know, the great thing about it is, even though in a kind of roundabout way, I wasn't quite ready to go back to writing, this still keeps me pushing my craft forward in a different way. This still keeps me growing my ability as a storyteller, kind of working on the fly. Instead of sitting behind a laptop, I'm actually doing this now in front of you to share the same sense, the same feeling, and I connect in the same way. So I'm really looking forward to those challenges, you know, and better part of me think I can get it done.
Yeah, no, and it sounds like everything's going to be great. And again, we're looking forward to all the stuff that we're going to see about a week from now. And again, I'll be hitting you up saying, hey, how'd the first show go? So, you know, if you get a text message from me, that's exactly what it is. But, you know, like I said, just the art of storytelling, you're right. You don't really get it often. And, you know, sometimes you don't feel like a journalist when you're doing it. You're like, look, man, I'm telling somebody's story. So it's really cool to actually hear it put in those words, because, you know, journalist doesn't exactly have the best tagline that goes along with it right now. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, and don't get me, and that's the thing people get twisted. And then MMA is in a sport where that really exists. I mean, there's some guys that have done some great work. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I think of the Josh Grosses of the world and, you know, people like that that have told, you know, they've done good journalistic work, but they've also had things that are blurred lines. I mean, Errol Hawani is the best example, man. There's no bigger, you know, he's the bar setter, has been for more than a decade, but he has blurred lines of where some of his checks have come from, you know what I mean? I'm saying that it just doesn't exist in MMA the way it does now. I mean, anybody who works for ESPN, now ESPN's going to deal with UFC. I mean, what do you mean? You know what I mean? Like, they're getting directly fed information from a promoter who is big, hey, you know, or it's crazy. So, you know, like I said, people could grapple all day about that, and a lot of them do, but I'm saying that's not important. It's not important. The people who make a living doing this, there are very few ways to make a living, a good living, and sometimes they have to come from the strange places. But you can always tell on the quality of work. That's what I always say. It does not matter if Dwayne Finley was fighter-friendly throughout his career. You can always tell on the quality of work. If I'm interviewing Vitor Belfort and he's had three steroid suspensions, it is definitely mentioned. It, you know, I've never glazed around anything. You know, I've done extensive work with John Jones. I'm one of the few people that have done that. And there's a reason for it, because John is a very particular individual. And John, you have to go at John directly at him. But John is going to come back at you, or John is going to challenge you in a lot of ways while you're doing that work. You know what I mean? It was a crazy scenario, you know, and that's one of the things, you know, that's actually one of the strangest best relationships, I've built is, you know, working, and I think that'll be somewhere down the line. I'll get the chance to kind of write about it, and you know, what it's like to work with or know, you know, the greatest fighter to ever do it. So, and there's a lot of gray area there, you know, with John, because we know he's, you know, his controversial past, but man, I'll tell you what, that guy has worked his ass off, and it's showing. You know, it's hard to deny 2019. I mean, if it all goes the same, then it would be one of the most epic years of fighters put together, you know. But I'm also in the pleasure working with, look at what Cowboy's doing right now. You know, it's amazing to see these guys. You know, Frank Yeager, these guys are still, you know, adjusting and getting it done. So, you know, I'm still very much a fan of certain things. I haven't followed the sport as closely. I try to watch the pay-per-view as I can, but you know, big shout out to my dude Dustin Poirier getting the job done, man. I don't know if I've seen a guy put so much pressure on himself, but also believing himself so much to get that done. I'm super, super proud of Dustin and super proud of Max Public Fight. I mean, you know, I lost my mother 2 years ago recently. The date just passed, and I'll never forget. Max Holloway, he's cutting weight to fight Phil Zeldo, and Max Holloway called me because he heard I lost my mother. I mean, you know, it's like that. It's those things that stick out to you, that tell you, like, damn it, man, I mattered. You know, I mattered. What I did mattered. Okay, so now I get past that. I've never been a guy to carry any ego about what I do. So now it's not about ego. It's about me going back to what got me going in the first place. It was the love and the belief that I could tell stories better than anybody else. And that's why it's getting me back. That's what's getting me back into MMA. You know, like I said, I can't talk about it right now, but once I do get it confirmed, everything's cool. I'll be right back on your show talking about it first person I talk to about it. But you know, these are the things, you know, kind of going all the way full circle to what we started with, Ryan, that it's very important that you take, you know, that you take breaks. It's very important that you fill that cup back up, because, brother, isn't that how big the cup is? It has to be filled with experience. It has to be filled with stories. Then you pour out that cup, and then what you're doing, then you refill it. Once that cup goes empty, and you don't have the energy to refill it, you're screwed, and you burn out, and it's just, it's not a good thing. So, you know, I know now what it looks like when I get close to being there, and that'll never happen to me again. I won't let it. So, I'm going to do things on my terms, the way I've always done them. I don't do things that I can't do on my own way. I'm stubborn like that. And so I'm setting out on this tour, and that's my own design to do that. And then these jobs that I'm in talks about taking, they're very much my terms and what I want to do. And if that all works out and everything works out great, then it'll be a great comeback story, you know. And if it doesn't, and it wasn't, then it wasn't meant for me. I remember when I was walking away, one of my longtime friends in this business is like, "Man, you've done so much, but you gotta stay relevant. Like, you gotta stay on Twitter. You gotta blah blah, or people are gonna forget." And I'm like, "Well, if they can just forget, because I haven't written a story in 3 months, then what I did never mattered." You know what I mean? I know if there's an urgency to stay on top of news cycles, to stay fresh, stay current, all these things, and stay up on the Twitter and blah blah blah. But if you can take a decade's worth of work, quality ass work that I think that I gave everything into, if I can go away and my voice gets silenced a little bit, and if people forget, then what I did wasn't worthwhile, and I had to accept that could happen. That didn't happen, but yeah, you know, I felt validation in the fact that it didn't happen, but mostly the most validation was that the fighters didn't forget. Kelvin Gastelum, you know, we need you out here, you know, like, we need you back, and we fighters need you, you know, and that's the kind of thing that makes you feel like you really did something. So, I wouldn't let leave those guys hanging out, you know, I'll come back, but it just had to be on my own terms.
No, I couldn't agree with you more, and absolutely right. Everything that you're saying, for those out there who are listening, and again, you know that this sport's still relatively new to the point where, you know, Dwayne, you're listening to my show the same way that I am listening to Mike Pendleton, the same way that, you know, Mike is reporting on my MMA news, and then, you know, same thing with Mike Heck, who used to basically be the host of this show. So, I mean, it's a small group of things, but, like, you know, hearing you say that is great, because I can't tell you, every one of the people that I just mentioned, that list, have all had that same thing. They're like, "I need a break," or I need to find something," or "something's not working." And man, it's great to hear somebody come right out and say it just the way you said it. So I thank you for that.
Well, and you know, you mentioned like little Mike, like I call him little Mikey because he's, you know, he's the young cat, but I love to death Mikey Pendleton. You know, like, you know, he's done great work for a long, long time, but, you know, Mike went through that thing where he's like, "Man, I deserve better. I deserve more. I'm scratching the surface, and it's just not working out." Well, that's the way this business does, man. Like, this business is very, like you said, insulated, small. It seems massive because it's on the internet. It's a big sport. But what we, our little bubble of it is tiny. So, you know, all the jobs we know, all the good paying gigs we know, you know, that's why I dig what Eric Cole's doing with the MMA News and, you know, things like that, where, you know, but there used to be a lot more indies, you know, like, I mean, Weekly was out there, you know, I know SB Nation's still doing their thing, but yeah, you know, those opportunities are shrinking. So what I'm saying is, the quality of work is what you have to believe in. It's not the quantity, and a lot of people focus on that, and it's the worst way to see it. It's like, okay, would you rather put out, you know, 300 shit, 200-word articles, or would you rather knock out 5,000-word articles that really knock it out of the park and really give something to somebody? Remember, that Wizard blog put out the greatest MMA stories of all time or something like that, and I was honored to have two of those stories on there, and those are two stories that I definitely worked my ass off on, and stories that I want, you know, you can feel when you're doing something for legacy, and a lot of people maybe not thinking that, they're thinking about here and now, but I get to a point where you've done it for so long, you know, you've told these people stories for so long that you feel like, okay, man, now I'm doing it for something that I can look back on and be like, man, Nobody told that guy's story better than me. And there's a handful of guys I know for a fact that nobody's touched what I've done with them, but I've also seen stories on guys where I'm like, man, you know, there's no need to go there. That's been done. You know, like Mendenhall doing that strange brew. I mean, that's a one-timer, man. You know, like you can't go into those waters. I mean, even Botter did Cormier with the champion. You know, I mean, you know, that was great. You know, like those are just kind of some of the ones that come to mind when I think about it. Those are the things that make me as a rider get excited. Like, okay, boom. Okay, there's the guys I'm rocking with. Now I want to rock and roll level. I had to prove it. So, and I don't have any doubt that I did prove it. Now it's coming back and finding the things that matter to me. Because if my heart's not in it, brother, I'm not doing it. Like I just said before, if I don't want to do it, I won't do it. And I have to be motivated to do it. And there are a few things that have come across the wire to me that I am very interested in doing. And when I'm interested in something, I'm a handful, bro. You know what I mean? Like, I'm up to deal with. So I'm ready to knock the rust off, and I'm going to get out on the road and do these things. And then if these opportunities take the shape like they look like it, then you'll be hearing from me soon.
Of course. And, you know, you mentioned the article that existed where you had two of your articles listed. Very funny that you mentioned that, because I remember saying to, I believe, Eric, and I may have even said it to you, you know, the definitive book of UFC hasn't been written, right? Like, I look over at my bookshelf and I have, you know, the New York Times collection of, like, the New York Yankees. And, you know, I've seen all these books written about, like, the career of Michael Jordan. Well, that UFC book hasn't been written. So one of the things that I feel that I would consider my success, myself a success in this sport, in this business, would be for me to have one of those stories. So when that book is written, you know, where it's just a collection of articles, right? Because that's how this sport works. It's a collection of articles. I would want myself to be listed among the Dwayne Finleys of the world that have been nominated for two of these, and among all the other people, the Morgans of the world that have continued to do this. That's what I look at. So you're right. It is more quality over quantity. And you do see how there are, you know, there's the grind business of that where they say, well, we need you to write, what, 3 or 4 stories a week at 300 words a pop, and that's how you're going to end up maintaining. But that feels like a grind, and that kills your interest in the sport, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, see, it can. And that's why I think a guy like yourself is different, because what you said just before that is what matters more. That what you said just before that is what gets you through the BS to-do list. You know what I mean? Like, okay, man, I see your interview comment, bro. I had to throw up a ton of, like, 200-word pieces, right? But what got me through those days was, I have a sit-down with Wonderboy, and we're going to talk about him and his dad. You know, we're talking, like, I'm going to, Simpsonville, these things, right? And what was funny about it, if you look, and I covered this in the book, that I put out, was, you know, the final few, you know, I think I became kind of known for, like, the road trip blog and things like that, and it was funny, the last few were very well funded and everything like that, but the first few, I remember Bleacher Report turned it down. They said, no, like, that's stuff that we're going to put money into. But you know what I did? I was like, screw it, if I don't do this, then I'm going to get buried with the rest of the guys. I gotta make myself stand out from the pack of guys that I'm chasing. I have to be able to be recognized in a different field. And that was the thing. And it was a gamble that paid off, and it changed my life. But it was all a risk, you know, because the company I worked for that had tons of money would not buy into it. Now, did they buy into the later ones? Absolutely. Once they saw how it worked and everything like that. But I had to show them. So, you know, to get through the mundane, that's how you get through it. You pick these projects, these passion projects that you know you're going to work on, that you know you're going to, you know, kick the hell out of, and you put your focus on that, and that's what gets you through those long nights of, like, oh, man, I got to write about another Miss Wade, or I got to blah, blah, I got to pull this quote from this, you know, this hitter or whatever, you know? Like, that's what you got to do. You go through the bigger stories because you want to make sure what you're doing counts. You know what I mean? And that's why I said what you said just before about the way you want to be recognized and the things that you want out of the sport. That's what matters. It doesn't matter, you know, the guys who write, you know, 500, 200 word articles, like, oh man, they're grinders, man. You can find them a dime a dozen. The kids are coming out of journalism school and there's no money out there and they'll write for free. Okay, and you want to get into a sport? Okay, yeah, okay, write these articles free. People do it all the time. So, you know, you get to a point where you're like, okay, well, I gotta, you know, we've all done free work at one point. It's the point where, okay, now I know what I'm worth. Once you hit those peaks, you you can set your value. Then that's also an important win, you know?
Of course. Well, you know, Dwayne, you and I have been able to hammer, pretty much every time you come on the show, hammer in the concept and the career that is journalism. And of course, you know, you're kind of, every time, no, it's fail-safe. We will always be able to discuss this in great length. And I think it's important because, you know, as much as setting the expectations of what you're worth, it's also, you know, important to set the expectations of this is what you're coming into. This is what the sport is. You know, if you want to be a journalist in this, if you want to be able to write about this, this is what you're going to have to be able to do. And I think it's a great segue for people to listen. You know, like you said, those dime a dozen kids who are coming out of journalism school and they want to start writing. You know, they're going to want to listen to this because they haven't ever been, or at least I haven't, when I was taking my classes in college, I was never told, hey, I need you to write a 300 to 500 word essay every time you come into class. You're like, what the hell? That never happened to me. But you know, it's in a roundabout way great to be able to talk about what this sport does and what it is, and we've seen how it's climbed, and we've seen what the internet's done to it, we've seen what the merger with ESPN has done with it, and it's just getting bigger. So, you know, it's almost like if you've been in it for this long and you have maintained it, consider yourself to be a success in some respects in that way, right? Because there's so many people who didn't, you know, they kind of didn't see what the UFC had long standing. They didn't see the potential of it being a major sport. And it's still not yet, but it's getting closer.
Oh, man, I can tell you, there's guys who were super big deals when I first got into the sport, like Sergio Nunn, USA Today, Fraser McNeil from ESPN, guys that have been gone for years now that are never ever mentioned anymore, and, you know, in any way. And that's a shame because, like you said, that definitive book has not been written on UFC and things of that nature. But the sport is definitely, the sport's coverage, the media coverage of the sport has definitely gone through several generations, you know, Wild Wild West and then, you know, UFC cracking down and, you know, code of conduct, things like that. You know, like those things have all kind of been covered. But yeah, man, the journey is very important that people understand what they're getting into, and I just don't think that a lot of people do. I mean, like at one point you could be, you know, I came from a creative writing background, so I didn't come from journalism at all. So, you know, and that showed in my work, you know, because I write narratively. I don't write, you know, like, you know, but in inches, the way newspaper writers do. So, and that's why I tend to be long worded. But the business of it, I know I'm a man. I'm super proud of my brother James Lynch. You know, he's put a good job with the score. But I know him do some stuff on his video journal. He's talking about the history of the business and hit people to it. You know, I don't think people realize quite the dog and animal it can be, but yeah, man, it's a grind for sure.
Well, and of course, like you said, we're going to hear about this grind and we're going to hear all the stories about, you know, this tour that you're going on and, you know, the people that you have that are going to be joining you. And we're super excited to continue to hear all of this. And, you know, like I said, I'll be following it like a hawk. But, you know, a few more things I want to hit on you because, you know, I also know what your time is worth. Obviously, I know that you say that you still watch UFC, you still try and catch pay-per-views, but you're not a man that's going to miss news stories, right? You're just not. So you still very much aware of everything that's going on in this sport from top to bottom. So I have to ask, and we're going to start.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
So I'm going to kind of do some spitfire questions at you and just kind of get your gut check reaction. So of course we're going to start with this Saturday. You were mentioning earlier John Jones, you know, greatest light heavyweight to ever do it. And we have a fight this weekend of two fighters who have both lost to him. Both have had wars with him, and Anthony Lionheart Smith and Alexander Gustafsson. And we read the ESPN story from Anthony Smith, and we know that Alexander Gustafsson is still trying to get another match. They both lost to John Jones. Who do you think is winning, and what's next for them after a win?
I don't mean to take anything away from Anthony Smith, but if Alexander Gustafsson does not go out there and dust Anthony Smith, Gustafsson needs to do something else. I mean, Gustafsson has gotten... I think Alex is one of the most talented guys in the world that weight has been for a long time. I think when he fought John the second time, he wasn't prepared for whatever reason, wasn't ready as he should be. I mean, still a prepared Gustafsson does not beat John Jones. John Jones is prepared. That's just the big facts in that one. Anthony Smith, he's a worker, bro. Like, you know, you can't take anything away from what Lionheart's done, but I just don't think caliber-wise he's on the level of Alexander Gustafsson. I think Smith has everything to gain and very little to lose, and is exactly opposite for Gustafsson. Gus has to win, because if Gus wants to stay relevant in a very vastly wide open 205, then if he loses this, then he takes a big jump towards obscurity. So I think Gus gets it done, man. And I believe it's in Stockholm, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and I think when he was last there, he got knocked out by Manoa. That happened. What happened?
Ooh, I think I think you're right. I think you're right there. I have to go back in the rankings. Keep talking. We'll get to this together.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but I think he was one of the times he was home, he did not perform well. So I think it's on him to get it done. I think he does. So like I said, if Smith wins, I can see it happen. But I think there's more ways for Alex to win.
All right. Moving over to the lightweight division. We all know what the lightweight division is. It's almost the wild wild west. You know. We see Dustin Poirier climb up as the interim champion in. Khabib, obviously, lightweight. We're wondering what's going to happen with Conor. You know, is he going to end up fighting somebody? Cowboy made a huge statement there about a month ago, and he's going to be taking on Tony Ferguson. And it's kind of interesting because I feel like the matchups that they're trying to make aren't the matchups that I would make. You know, to me, I think Tony Ferguson should still be the next in line to challenge Khabib. But I also know that they've tried to make that fight like four damn times, and it's fallen through every time. So how do you see the shakeups here? We'll start with obviously knowing that Cowboy's going to end up fighting Tony Ferguson. How are you with that fight, and how do you see that fight going down?
I was super surprised with that fight. But the same way, I've been on the team for training for a long time. Ferguson, that dude was me, man. I loved it, especially coming off that Pettis fight. That was nasty, man. That was classic Tony Ferguson. But we've also seen a few things that have kind of given us cause for concern outside of the octagon that have happened and kind of popped up. You know, a few kind of behavioral issues. So you really don't know. So here's what I think. If Tony's 100% focused, he is a nightmare. But the thing is, everything that Tony's super good at, Donald's also super good at. Donald could scramble. Donald could play the ground game. He's definitely going to play the striking game. He's a much better striker than Ferguson, but Tony's got a gas tank and don't quit. Donald has had some trouble in the past with guys who come right at him, but this new version of Cowboy seems to kind of enjoy guys that come right at him. So I think, I would not have made that fight either. I would have thought that, you know, T-Ferg would have got next, or they would have done him in Poirier. Because we don't know what Khabib's timeline is, but I strangely love it, and I think this is great because I think the thing that Cowboy's chasing is he wants that title. You know, he wants to be able to put that on his amongst all of his other accolades and accomplishments. And you know, there's a guy there's finding out a guy who deserves it more than Cowboy. Can he get it done? He's in a Shark Tank. He's in a Shark Tank division, but he's also a badass shark. So we'll see. Like I said, I think I'm going with Cowboy on this one. I think Cowboy's a crisper striker. He throws straight down the pipe. I think Tony's like putting in a box, you know, like he did with Pettis. Donald's not the same kind of striker. Donald will fight with you in the box, you know, and we'll see. But I think I like Cerrone in this.
All right. And we'll stay on that fight card. Women's strawweight, we just recently saw Rose Namajunas lose to Jessica Andrade. I've had Rick Little on the show before, and he has been adamant in saying that he feels that the person who's going to hold the belt at the end of 2019 is also fighting on the same card in Tatiana Suarez at 7-0, taking on Nina Ansaroff. First off, does Tatiana get past Nina? And second part of that, we all know that the winner of this probably has to have the next title contention. Can either of these two fighters take down Jessica Andrade?
If Tatiana beats Nina, I'm pretty confident in that. But I don't know if she's ready for Andrade yet. You know what I mean? That's the thing, is when you have a kind of a vacuum where there's not a whole ton of talent that's primed and ready, things are kind of wide open. But at the same time, Andrade has a lot of holes in the game. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, she was getting pieced up until she powerbombed Rose, you know? So, she wasn't winning easily. So I think I think this is good. Like, I think the more new blood in there, and both, and Nina's got an awesome story too. You know, I mean, come on, like, you know she don't train with anything light. You know what I'm saying? She's putting in heavy work at ATC. You know, with her girlfriend. So I think that's an amazing fight, and it's a great opportunity for both of them. But I would say Tatiana with me.
All right, and then finally, we'll kind of turn it on to the news side here. We saw that Yoel Romero won a huge settlement with tainted supplements, and after all of that, I mean, do you think that that's something that kind of warrants a Yoel Romero, I guess, apology, for lack of a better term?
I'll tell you what, and this is something I've said for a long time, Yoel Romero has the best manager in this business. You know, Abe and Malky are people that have their own opinions of him, which I'm sure, you know, that they've been earned. But those guys are great work. And dude, Yoel, like, this is a great situation for him. Obviously, you know, he's been kind of following around with these rumors and whatnot, these other situations, and for him to get his name clean at $27 million, I mean, bro, you know what I mean? So Yoel Romero is a happy man, and for such a physical beast, those of you who've ever, like, sit next to him or work with him, he is an intimidating human being. He is the sweetest heart. He's got the sweetest heart of anybody I've ever seen. You know, to be that scary looking and to be that nice. So I think it's great for you, Alan Romero. I think he'll get some nice sunglasses and some vacation.
And then the last thing that we're going to talk about, kind of, I don't know that we're shocked per se, but when fighters say that they want to retire, you kind of have to take that with a grain of salt, because, you know, that fighting spirit lives in them. And Uriah Faber is set to return against Ricky Simon in Sacramento, looking at probably trying to get another 3-fight contract. Do you think that Uriah still has it the same way that, like, the Cowboys of the world have it?
Cowboy never retired.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
You know, the Cowboy never said, I want to step away. And like Dana said for forever, you know, regardless of anybody thinks about Dana White has been 100% right on this fact. If that retirement word floats through your mouth and out your lips, then it's time you do it. You know what I mean? Because your heart's not in. As far as I know, I think Faber just had a kid. And I think Faber started his family now. And I don't get it. I honestly don't get it. He's done very well for himself with the Ultimate Fitness, and he's got his hands in a lot of things. I know he was in his movie project, helped produce this movie project that my boy Rick Cleveland did. So I don't get it. But then there's also that competitive spirit. You know, I saw Uriah competed for us at Flow Grappling. He did the Chael Sonnen show, it was the sub show, and I think there's an urge to compete. I think the Simon kid's a tough comeback fight for. I don't know why Uriah is doing it. I don't think it's my choice.
Wow. All right. Well, obviously, like I said, I wasn't going to keep you too long. We're kind of keeping you under an hour, which is great. I'm knock on wood for myself there. But, you know, before we let you go, always want to let everybody know where we can find you, where we can follow you. You're still very well followed, as far as at least on Facebook is concerned. And watching your son shoot baskets, you know, is something that's always humorous to watch. But, Dwayne, where can we find you? Where can we catch all of these shows? Everything that we were talking about.
All right, yeah, it's been, I'm always I'm always accessible on Facebook. I'm on there more than anything. On Instagram, at Duane Finley, D-U-A-N-E-F-I-N-L-E-Y. And on Twitter, at Duane Finley MMA. You know, I usually have something on everything, on either, at least some social site, once every, you know, something once a day. So, you know, right now I've been enjoying my family, so it's been a lot of my little alien kids doing crazy stuff. But, very soon it will be all different content. So, check it out. And like I said, I'll be back to talk to you, brother, once I get a few T's crossed.
Oh, I don't have any doubt about that. I'll be blowing your phone up again and making sure that we do that. Well, we always enjoy having you on.
Absolutely.
All right. So that was always enjoy your time and look forward to all the shows. But ladies and gentlemen, Duane Finley, one of the best to do it. We can't thank him enough for stopping by and always be able to have him on the show basically whenever he wants it.